shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. And we have a doozy for you this week. Movie that I think we all just watched. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm here with Cody Wolf.
Nibble on my ear.
I knew it. Jack Estabrook.
Despite the title of this film, I will not be providing my services for free.
I did. That was my first thought, is that this could be a campaign for when Jack gets locked up. We'll start the Free Jack campaign. And Christy Smorrow.
One Mississippi, two Mississippi.
That was so weird. Yeah. That was one, like when that was happening in the movie, that was the point where I was like, whoa, movie, is this, are you really doing this? Like, this isn't a joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Our movie this week is 19. I remembered this movie as a kid, as we were talking about off mic, but 1992's Free Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Made in a very narrow window when Emilio Estevez was a leading man.
Mm-hmm. I kept waiting for him to break out some hockey euphemisms or something.
And, yeah. You know, I think this
I love
was,
the Mighty Ducks, so that's all. I kept seeing Coach Bombay.
I think this was like right after Mighty Ducks had been a hit, because he was sort of like briefly in that kind of tier,
and then came down. Films from like 88 to like 92, and that was about it, right?
Well, this is our second Emilio Estevez starring film.
When it started, I was like, how have we not done an Emilio Estevez movie yet? And I was like, oh, wait a minute, Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
And that's what I kept thinking of when I saw this movie, was Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could name a movie he's been in aside from Mighty Ducks.
Men at Work, the garbage man movie, which I think is, we're already off track, but he's in National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1,
which is a masterpiece.
Oh, that's true. He is in that. And Men at Work is not a bad movie. It's surprisingly funny.
I
mean, it's not great, but it's funnier than it probably deserves to be. There's a lot going on in this movie, so let's dive right into because I have so many. Oh yeah,
which is Christy mentioned off mic that was very disorienting, and she's right.
I've never heard of this movie before. I knew absolutely nothing about it except for who was in it, and my husband told me, oh yeah, it's a sci-fi something, and so when I started watching it, there's Days of Thunder on one side, and then
I kept thinking
Mad Max on the other side, and I'm like, I had no idea what was going on until I saw the Nissan sign twice. I'm like, oh, okay, Mick Jagger's in the future.
I didn't know if he was in the future or like in another dimension or something at first, like a Mario kind of thing, Super Mario Brothers kind of alternate dimension. But
I was trying to figure that out too. There, yeah. Well, and they don't give you any reason to. It's they're clearly, this is a choice where they're like, oh, okay, how are these going to come together? But it goes on so long that you kind of stop caring how these two are going to come together, and you're just like, all right.
There's no real, there's no story in the Mick Jagger side. There's nothing to keep you. So I'm much more invested in the Days of Thunder side and thinking, okay, why do you keep going back to Mick Jagger?
And on the Days of Thunder side, we meet Emilio Estevez as Alex Furlong, who is a race car driver, and who seems to be making a rabbit cameo. Speaking of race car drivers, that rabbit is moving. Who is preparing for a big race.
Mm-hmm.
But in the intercutting, like, why did we also see Emilio Estevez go around the course with no other cars on the course?
Yeah, at first
time
I thought...
trial?
I think it was like a practice or a trial or something. But
okay, on the day of the race? Because that makes
like
no
minutes,
sense.
Like right before the race.
Yeah, it's like, why would you... Yeah. Okay. And his girlfriend is Rene Russo.
Yes.
And I guess, so in theory, this is like 1991.
The movie says that this is 1991.
Yeah.
1991.
Because when he's in the future, he has to check his little wristband that he got at the course to say, oh, it was 1991. Okay. He didn't know what year he came from.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
That was weird, yeah.
Sorry, I jumped ahead a little bit there. But.
And his agent is David Johansen, who film fans would know from being the cabbie in Scrooged. What band was he with?
The New York Dolls.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the singer.
And And it's just, Christy is kind of right. One of the crazy things about this movie is you're seeing two concurrent storylines, neither of which are really going anywhere. At least there's dialogue on the Emilio Estevez side. And you're just like, all right.
Because Emilio Estevez is about to go to a race. It's daytime. It's set present day. He's with his girlfriend. They're celebrating this big race he's going to drive in. And then it cuts to nighttime, barrels on fire, giant futuristic SWAT vehicles, and Mick Jagger in like a space helmet giving orders. And this guy with like a darkened lens, like eye just patch one. Sunglasses thing yeah. going. That we later find out there's no reason why he wears it. And there's and it just keeps going back and forth. The only way you can even think maybe this is a time travel thing or a parallel universe thing without reading the synopsis, which I did, but at the same time I saw the movie on TV years ago. But if you don't know that going in, without that one Nissan banner, which apparently was never taken down after the race was over, don't they generally like hang them up on the course and then like the sponsor like was, for the race?
It looked like it wasn't a banner, that it was like painted on a bridge.
Oh.
Because if it was a banner, then that billboard's
that billboard's been
right
around for a long time.
And what
they're
kind
using
of
it like
crazy
a,
product really sponsorship is this? Because like jumping out a little bit, this is why do we remember it?
I remember
it's
because this.
Because
yeah,
a
yeah.
race car smashes yeah, into it. I'm guy. Like, why would Nissan want to be associated with that? A violent, fiery crash. And every time this footage gets replayed, spoiler, it gets replayed all the
oh,
time.
Yes.
You just see Nissan and a fiery crash. I don't know
the car about, exploding.
I don't know a lot about branding, but I'm not sure that's the brand you want.
I think it works.
Yeah.
What?
Well, and now I'm thinking about it. Like, why? There seemed to be some sense of urgency to like when they got him.
Yeah.
Like, they had to get him at that exact moment. But it's, like, something that happened in the past. I think
yeah,
that's
that
what
was,
I was thinking, like,
that was
parallel
strictly,
universe.
That was strictly the, just for the movie. Because I was
yeah.
thinking the same thing. Like,
I just thought of
it doesn't, you don't have to have a countdown
right,
to when it happens in the future. Because you can just pick whenever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was just so that we could have the suspense of what's going to happen mm-hmm. to Emilio Estevez. Because mm-hmm. there's something about to happen. Yeah,
yeah.
That
like,
bugged
me. If they didn't get it, then they just, okay, let's try again. Because it happened
time
20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a Sound of Thunder thing where they know they can kill that one dinosaur because it was going to fall in the tar pit anyway. So here it's kind of like, well, we know we can steal these people from the past because they were going to die anyway. We'll just do it a split second before they die, quickly revive them.
Yeah.
So history doesn't change because they died anyway.
I think there was something like they had to be in that certain spot.
To make
like,
geographically, in the spot makes sense,
yeah.
but the
so
time.
They can,
the
so
time
they,
wouldn't,
they can
yeah.
travel through time, but they can't travel through space.
Yeah, it was very weird. The rules of time travel. I mean, because there's only one time travel that happens
yeah.
in the movie, and the rules of it are never really defined.
Yeah.
Except there's some kind of a laser grid wave web that they use to like catch them or something.
There's always a laser grid in a
90s
yeah.
movie.
It was like the
purple lightning in the 80s. They replaced it with laser grid in
yeah.
the 90s. They were like, nobody likes purple lightning anymore. We're going to go laser grid.
But
you have to have blue lightning for any kind of stun gun.
Oh, of course.
True.
Oh, that's right. There was blue lightning in this movie.
Yeah,
well, it was a transitional phase. It was a transitional phase from the 80s to the 90s. Those first couple of years they're trying to find it.
My favorite thing, too, in this opening section is David Johansen, as Emilio Estevez's agent, introduces him. He's like, hey, you got to meet some sponsors. And I guess Emilio Estevez is the first ever race car driver who's against sponsorship. I mean, have you ever seen a race car that wasn't like overflowing with sponsorship? But
he is wearing a jacket full of sponsor logos, though.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know why. So,
and it's not like they imply that it's like. Well, first of all, this plot goes nowhere. But
oh, it never comes back.
It's not like it's like some shady group. Like it's not like. Hey, I finally got a sponsor. I'm this young race car driver. I finally got a sponsor. Everything's looking up. And then he dies in the crash, right?
No.
It's, I finally got you a sponsor. I'm doing that job that you paid me to do. Here's your sponsor. You could go suck it, Mr. Johnson. And he like turns around and walks away. And I'm like, what? What? Like, where are we going here?
I took that as the foreshadowing that this guy's smarmy.
Oh, okay.
I guess
that works. I guess that is,
but like the worst part is the sponsors don't seem smart, which is like because
yeah.
I think you're right. I think they undercut their own sort of like foreshadowing.
Yeah, I think they were trying to show you that this guy isn't really all that trustworthy, but it didn't really. I mean, I picked up on it, but it didn't really work.
It didn't really work. And
I didn't pick up on it at all.
Didn't you like when he introduced the one guy? He meets one of the potential sponsors, and he's like. "Hello, son. Champion spark plugs." Like, his name is Champion.
Well, it was cheaper for him to patent the name if he got it legally changed.
Well, even
his own name.
Even Emilio Estevez says, "Oh, nice to meet you, Mr. Plugs."
Yeah, yeah. It was such a weird. That scene was so strange. And luckily, Mick Jagger is also watching a lot of this. Like, he's watching.
Yes, yeah,
so like somehow they have video footage of everything that happens to Emilio Estevez in the moments leading up to his death, not just news footage of the race itself.
But I think this is like a live feed from the past. Like, he's like looking into the past.
Are they able to see that?
I think it is.
That's why he's timing it out to when he.
Yeah, it's
weird.
It's really weird, and I wish they had kind of the movie is, this is the least of the movie's problems, but I wish they had explained this a little bit, because I never felt clear what Mick Jagger was actually doing.
There's absolutely no exposition when it comes to time travel or, you know, what they're doing.
Yeah, they kind of once it's done, they're just done with it.
Yeah, I guess that, you know, the nun explains it a little bit, but that's about it.
I wish they'd almost just like not even pretended to explain it, be like, oh yeah, we can pluck people out of the past, but didn't give us this like setup of Mick Jagger watching video monitors they pull right before Emilio Estevez's car hits a Nissan sign and blows up. They pull him out of the past, bring him into 2009.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you guys just remember 2009?
Yeah, I laughed when I realized
time travel and like weird cars and dystopia.
And so then they have to revive him. Are they reviving him from like the time travel or from?
Yeah, that didn't make
because
sense
because he wasn't on fire.
He didn't hit the sign yet.
So it's not like he died of a heart attack and then burst into flames.
Yeah,
because all these strange things are happening that they say are strange, and we're like, guys, we're still in the first 10 minutes of the movie. We've never seen anyone travel through time. Like, we don't, they're like,
we don't know what 2009 looks like.
He has brain function. How did that happen? I'm like, I don't know. You guys do that. Does everyone have brain function? Like, Like,
I assumed you wanted him to have brain function.
Yeah, I don't know. Why wouldn't he? So, they're all upset, like, oh, this guy's brain is still working. Bring in the lobotomizer, which is. Not just a lobotomizer, it's like a portable ray gun lobotomizer. Like, you could be like shooting it at people who are on the move, which is really crazy. Because at the same time, the car that they, or truck, I guess, that they brought Emilio Estevez into is under attack from.
Ooh, I don't know.
I'm assuming.
Rebel? I don't know.
I at the time, I had no idea, but by the end of the movie, looking back, I'm assuming it was. Mike from Breaking Bad.
Jonathan Banks. Mitch Lister.
Oh.
Michelette. Yeah.
Yeah, something like
okay.
that.
Because
I think he's trying to stop it from happening. You don't know that till the last
But it
five
seems
minutes,
like, but. Yeah, because I didn't, you know, I mean, maybe I just turned my brain off, but I didn't pick up that twist until the end. Like, oh, he's one of the bad guys too. He's a different faction.
They do also.
So maybe it adds up. But
well, maybe that would kind of add up. But Mick Jagger also references at another point that there just seemed to be rebels and
uprisings
going on.
I was
going
to say, to me it seemed like...
Maybe he's writing it off as that, and it's actually Jonathan.
Well, Mick Jagger did make a comment, somebody knew where the convoy was going to be.
Oh, that's true, too. Okay.
So, yeah, at the time, I was like, all right, so there's got to be an inside
job double,
somewhere. They never say that... I don't think they ever like have.
I don't think that's ever.
And at the end, it does make sense. At the end, that he has this alternate agenda, and he's just trying to screw up his boss. But it, I don't know why the big mystery here. When we have to figure out the mystery of what Emilio Estevez is doing there and why, which they haven't explained yet. I would have preferred he dies in the crash and wakes up in the future, and we see everything through his eyes, and he learns as the movie goes on. Oh my God, I've been stolen from the past, but why?
That might have been interesting, though.
That would have been a better movie.
That would have been.
That's not what we got.
Portable.
Jack will rewrite it for free if you wish to make this movie better.
Right.
It's a free Jack rewrite.
That's right.
Hey, well, that's the real free Jack. Yeah.
Also, there's like way too many layers of bad guys in this movie.
Oh, this is. I'm going to go on a rant at the end of this about the layers of bad guys and what any.
And they're all like bad guys to each other too, which is.
Oh yeah, and none of their motivations. The only one who has a motivation. Well, only one has a motivation, and that motivation is laughable. The other two don't even have coherent motivations.
Nope.
But are in conflict with the other two.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so now Emilio Estevez, who, after using the portable lobotomizer to lobotomize everyone in his truck except for himself.
The doctors that are all wearing tinfoil.
Yeah.
So they're okay. They're protected.
So he jumps out of his truck, or that he's
in. There's like a hole in it now. And he
there's like a gets out of it. It just jumps out. He takes the world.
Because the ray gun lobotomizer can also blow holes in the side of a tank.
Very dangerous.
I couldn't understand where
that's not a lobotomizer.
From.
That's a dehedonizer.
Yeah, that's true.
A decapitator.
He takes the world's shortest cab ride, where he gets in a cab, gives the cab.
Yeah, was
this is just to establish that the world sucked. I was half hoping that Ernest Borgnine would be in it from like Escape from New York, just at random.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Snake Plissken in my cab, but we are not Snake Plissken, and he like throws him out. I think that would have been amazing. It made no sense, but it would have made the movie better.
I think a lot of the pitch of this movie was someone saying, "What if Escape from New York and Blade Runner were one movie?"
Yeah.
Like. And
a little Days of Thunder thrown in the mix.
Yeah.
Just like a tablespoon of Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
Just for like 5 minutes.
Because parts of this movie are happening in, like, this part is happening in, like, knockoff Escape from New York.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the later parts of the movie are happening in horrible knockoff Blade Runner. And I think somebody at one point literally yells, "Hey, he's a free Jack."
I think multiple times.
I think maybe,
somewhere
in this, and I'm like, okay. So also, we're in a world where this has happened.
They had to say the title of the movie. They just had to say it.
Well, they did, but they've done so much of this time travel that there's actually a commonly understood term for when someone is brought back from the time travel and whose brain is functioning and who goes on the run.
This is clearly not a government secret in this future.
No. Yeah. This is well known.
Everybody does.
But if there's no, if nobody comes from the past to the future with brain function, then how are there ever any free jacks running around?
Yeah. How is
this
so
common? They strongly imply that this is the one guy that's different.
Because when
why not just say, "Beep, boss, we lost one. Get him, you idiot!" You know, I know it's cliche, but that seems to be what. No, they have to be like, "He's a free jack," and they have to like brand him.
Yeah.
And when Emilio Estevez goes up to people, he's like, "I believe I'm a free jack." Everyone's like, "Oh, well, certainly."
And everyone like accepts it. Wow. People are going to be like, "What? Get out of here!" Even if they know that what a free jack is for no reason, but they apparently do.
Everybody
wouldn't they
knows.
Be more like, "Oh my God, you're from the past? Can you tell me about it? Were things better than they are now?" Because clearly, for some reason, the world has gone to hell, and it's all burning barrels and people warming their hands.
It's only been 18 years. Those people were alive when he was.
Yeah,
well, they would have known. You're right. It's living memory. I forgot. It is 2009.
Yeah,
I keep thinking it was further forward because of all the crazy tech they keep presenting.
Well, then they'd have to actually age people.
Yeah.
Rene Russo
did not age at all.
I don't think they aged.
Russo looks identical.
And David Johansen looked identical.
Yeah, they didn't. Nobody
they didn't
aged.
Anybody. Yeah. Well, and I also enjoyed how once Emilio Estevez's character realizes he's traveled through time, he is completely unfazed. He has no reaction to this whatsoever. Like, that he's just like, "Oh, okay." Like, well, and this is, on this show, I think we see a lot of sort of comatose performances, but this really goes into the comatose performance hall of fame. I mean, at no point does Emilio Estevez, is he doing anything that he couldn't be doing while also shopping for groceries? Yeah. You know what I mean? He tends to sort of like amble from scene to scene, like not even run. Like there's just...
he had to fake having a limp.
That's right.
Half a second.
Yeah, where did that go? That's like one shot.
Why did he even need to? So that people didn't... people would guess you're a free jack unless you limp. Oh, okay. Limp harder. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's kind of like limps like Quasimodo. Like,
and then at some point he's like, "Nah, people are on to me."
we're kind of getting lost here, but...
Yeah.
So he goes, he gets to the future, he finds out he's like running from these, what's Mick Jagger's name? I can't remember, some stupid name.
It's funny, because like Emilio Estevez says it like 100 times,
every one time someone says, they say it a bunch in this movie, but every time they say it, it sounds like a
it's like
name.
Evil bad guy, man.
Yeah. But so he's running from Mick Jagger and his guys.
Vicious or
and
something.
In the process, he finds out he's a free jack, because he goes back to his old apartment and there's someone else living there, and they realize he's a free jack, like, "Get out of here, we're calling the..."
To the point where they actually say to him, "You're a free jack."
Yeah,
like
so
in the same like awareness of where we'd be like, "Oh, you're a veterinarian," right? Like, everyone knows what this is.
So then he goes to... Oh, okay. So then he goes to a church.
Yes.
And this is so cliche, because I'm like, okay, he goes to a church and he's like hiding out in this church. It's kind of run down and there's no one there. And like a nun comes up. And I'm like, okay, she's got a gun and she's going to swear a lot because it's that would be ironic and funny. And it's
but
the
you
future.
Know what? This is the only compliment I'm going to play this movie. Amanda Plummer does.
Oh, she
make
did
it
well,
work.
But it was, yeah. It was like, okay.
It shouldn't have worked. You're right. Yeah. It should have been totally cliche.
I think they
and
knew
ridiculous.
That and they said, we got to get Amanda Plummer. She could sell it. And she did.
Yeah. So yeah. She like pulls a gun out. She's like, what are you doing here?
Bob? I bought it for pennies.
And, and,
for free, Jack?
Oh.
Maybe.
Thank God Jack's here so we can make this joke all
maybe
hour long. Yeah. He's talking to her and he convinces her that he's a free Jack or whatever. I can't remember.
And
exactly
she does a little exposition.
Yeah. Like, so she's sort explaining of, it.
Right. Again, he's totally unfazed. He's like, yep. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Feed me that information.
Yep.
But he convinces her to help him out. And he's like, he wants to find Rene Russo.
Right.
He's got to get to his wife.
Yeah. So they're not married yet, Jack. Oh. You're getting ahead of yourself. Yeah.
Honeymoon in Bermuda. Yeah. Room. That never happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Nissan got in the way.
Yeah.
Nissan gets in the way of love. That's so the message of this film.
She looks up Rene Russo. She's like, oh, I can't find her. And he's like, oh, look up Brad, which is the other, what's his name? From
the agent, or his agent guy. Yeah, Dave Johansson, yeah.
So she's like, okay, yeah, I found him. He's here, whatever. And he gets the address from her. So then he goes to Brad.
Yeah.
Who's then like, okay, I can help you out. I know where Rene Russo is. So then they go to...
He's clearly going to sell him out.
Well, it's a little, yeah.
Well, you know what?
It's a little slimy.
And when he comes to meet Dave Johansson, you know what's... Here's what's not surprising to Emilio Estevez. The fact that he's the first human being he's aware of to travel through time. What is shocking to him? That David Johansson had insurance on him in 1991. Yeah. He is just... in awe of that. But yet it was like everyone should be like, dude, you are in the future. Like this is the least surprising thing that has happened.
Evidently it wasn't a lot of insurance because it wasn't exactly living in the lamp of luxury.
No, yeah. They couldn't find the body. So
oh, that's right. He does mention that. You're right.
David Johansson should have been like, buddy, you had a hand lobotomizer shot at you, rockets, tanks, time travel, like, and you're upset about this insurance
policy. And he got to
meet
Mick Jagger.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah.
Well, I also liked that he commented... David Johansson commented on how young Emilio Estevez looks, but David Johansson hasn't aged at all. Yeah, nobody
his
ages.
His hair is shorter and he's a little dirtier.
I think he didn't shave that day. I think that was basically
he
it.
He looks completely the same. Yeah, this is so lazy. I don't know why.
That's why I laugh later on when Rene Russo says, like, oh, I'm older now. Like,
you don't look a day over 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
She looked no different at all.
And they even showed the old footage of her. Right.
She looks identical. Yeah.
So Brad takes him to a diner for some reason because I guess that's where like the phone is that
some
he can
toothless
use.
Toothless guy doesn't like slop on green beans.
Yeah.
So he sits him down. He's like, I'm gonna make a phone call. Whatever. He goes to call Rene Russo apparently, allegedly, and he comes back. He's like, okay, they're coming to get us. They're gonna bring us to her. Blah blah blah. And he like says something like he's like grabs a sandwich. He's like, oh, I'm eating this. I'm gonna be eating caviar in 5 minutes. And Emilio Estevez in this movie like takes suspicion out like the most innocuous statements or anything.
He is not suspicious of things he should be very suspicious of, but then sometimes like is like, hey, wait a second.
Well, yeah, because here he's like, wait, you said I, not we, and he's like, what? He's like,
except
you sold me out.
This totally bugged me because he actually said, you said I, not us.
Not
which is
us is going to be eating caviar.
Yeah,
it's I, not we.
Like that just totally bothered me, which is stupid.
It's
2009.
The way we speak has changed.
Yeah.
Slang.
This also, when they go into this diner, I loved how for whatever reason they just decided to put David Johansson and Emilio Estevez in costumes from like Gangs of New York, and Pharrell's hat. Like for some reason, this is
well. It was the future, so
they predicted
Pharrell's hat. Oh my god, I didn't know that.
It did. And have you ever seen a
visionary.
More ridiculous hat in a like a major motion picture? This hat on Emilio Estevez's head looks ridiculous. It looks like straight out of a Warner Brothers cartoon. Like his head is going to open up if you lift the brim of the hat. It's crazy.
Yep.
So they're sitting there. So he gets suspicious because he said I, not us. And then the cops pull up or whoever pull up.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you sold me out. And they get in a fight and someone comes in and like shoots Brad.
Yeah.
He's like trying to, I can't remember.
Yeah,
he gets shot.
He gets shot. Yeah.
He gets killed.
They needed him out of the movie. Yeah. So he gets shot. Yeah.
So then Emilio Estevez, is this where he gets into
this is
truck
where we
chase?
Get the truck chase.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he...
The champagne truck? That...
Yes.
That comes later.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. This is now,
this was games. The motorcycle.
This is the foot, yes.
Oh, yeah, he steals a police motorcycle.
Yes. Because one of the funny things with this movie, because they
he's
were...
looking for this address where Rene Russo lives.
Yeah.
He's trying to get there, because they're very cheap.
Which happens
in
very
the
quickly,
future,
not.
Nothing is different when it comes to production design, except for cars. Like, yeah. Someone was like, oh, yeah, all of our cars need to have, like... We just need to put like foam core slick lines over normal cars, but like
when you look at like history, the cars are the things that change like the least, really.
Yeah.
Like it's like they're always focused on the cars in these sci-fi movies, you know. And like Back to the Future, they did it kind of as a joke, but you see it all the time in like in Blade Runner and in Total Recall and in RoboCop, the cars all look funky.
Which,
like,
I mean,
well,
if you're setting it 100 years in the future, something is okay. But if you're setting it
18 years
in the future, it's like, they're not going to change
that
much.
World changed a lot in 18 years, but Rene Russo did not.
Right.
Not at all.
Right. And it's kind of like, this chase is sort of weird because it's like, it's almost running like a video game chase where it ends up in a loop where he ends up back in the exact same restaurant that it started in with him coming back through. So there's sort of like a callback gag because the guy he got in an argument with in the restaurant, he like gets in another, like has another moment with.
Yeah.
I didn't understand. I felt like they were just like, we got to recycle these sets. Yeah. You know, for a major motion picture, we have a very limited budget.
So he escapes Mick Jagger men.
The Bone Jackers, I don't think they've been called Bone Jackers yet.
I don't think so. They waited until like later on in the movie.
Yeah.
I was just calling them like...
Is that something
Amanda... Could they call them something like scarier, like stalkers or something? Like not bone jackers?
Well, yeah. Bone
like
jacking...
stalkers. It just sounds a little more scary.
Bone jacking that, for what they're doing makes far more sense than free jack.
They're not bone
jacking,
I'll tell you that much. What? Oh, I'm sorry. We have a lady present. Two ladies present. I apologize. Jeez.
So
it was true.
Amanda Plummer who explained like what they are? That they're like
she vaguely goes over it. Yeah,
she talked about how they are. You know, you can implant someone's mind, the mind transplant, not a brain transplant.
Yeah, right.
She talked about consciousness can be, but I don't think she used the term bone jacking. Or
I don't know if we'd explain that yet, because that's supposedly the core of this movie is that they brought Alex Furlong, Emilio Estevez into the future. So that some rich person could take over his mind and body.
Because he's old and dying.
Because they're old
now,
and dying.
I figured it out pretty quick. Spoiler alert, once they introduced Anthony Hopkins and they had that one mysterious scene where the guy in the hood says, I must have this face. I said, oh, okay. So Anthony Hopkins is in love with Rene Russo but can't have her, so he's going to use Emilio's body to try to like sex her up. Like that was literally, I figured it out like in that moment.
Well, he's
like,
also the only old guy in this movie. Yeah, like, you know, because I figured like that was going to have to be.
But what I was not seeing was the Jonathan Banks twist, which I did appreciate, even though I still didn't like the movie. I said, oh, okay, well, that's different. Okay,
well,
I wasn't expecting that one.
We'll have to, All right. Well, we'll get into that. I really can't wait to dissect this movie's twist.
It's just
we should mention. So that I think around here
they show and triple crosses.
They show Rene Russo for the first time in the future.
Yeah,
she's working with Jonathan Banks
and Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. Well, you see her with Jonathan Banks.
Right.
And they work for Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
Who is supposedly in some, he's like in a foreign, like Australia or
Can
something.
Can I ask you a question? This is a genuine question. What does the Anthony Hopkins company do? I don't think that's ever made clear, is it? That it's just
I was
like,
kind of assuming that it was one of those, you know, generic corporations of the future that do everything.
It did. I think that's what it was. It was just
they
like.
They provide bone jacking services to old people.
That's great.
Is that their whole thing? Because it felt like it was just very much like, this is our business. You know,
please
we
don't
do business.
Google search that.
Yeah.
You
know,
they're in like a business meeting where they're...
What? No, I'm sorry, don't.
Where they're like making a deal or whatever and then...
And it has something to do with mineral rights.
Something like that.
Well, yeah. Maybe they mine.
So like
who
a
knows
land
what that
deal.
Means
yeah.
In 2009.
I think it was just like, they were just like, oh yeah, we're just a business corporation.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That was sort of the bad guy in the 80s. Action in sci-fi movies, and again, this is the early 90s, so whereas the lightning is giving way to the laser grid, so too were the corporate villains kind of slowly going away, but they still kind of had some position in the plot,
yeah.
So they decided not to flesh it out. Like, oh, we'll make them corporate bad guys, whatever, the 80s.
Yeah, it was fine. It was just like a weird thing where I realized at the end, I'm like, I don't know what this company does. Like, I guess it doesn't really matter in the scope of the movie, or nothing matters.
It's the corporation that has everything while everyone else has nothing.
It's the corporation for public broadcasting. They've gone rogue and meant evil in the future.
So he does, Emilio Estevez does find Rene Russo and
but
just kind of...
But it was pretty, I didn't like the way this happened. So there's this kick-ass chase scene, well, supposed to be kick-ass chase scene anyway, and there's this chase scene with motorcycles and shooting and explosions, and Rene Russo comes home and Emilio Estevez is standing there, like walks in on her while she's like half naked in the bathroom.
He's
like, hey, baby.
In the bathroom, yeah.
She says, she's like, what, you're not my, you're some weirdo who bone-jacked my husband. You're a sick man, get out. And he says, no, it's really me. Here's this locket you gave me. And she says, how'd you get in? And he says, I just walked in the door. And I was like, what? There wasn't going to be like a scene where he gets in. Like, they didn't even show that.
That was, they were trying to have another twist. Because later on, she says, Jonathan Banks set us up. He opened,
Mick Jagger left the door unlocked.
Yeah.
But you're right. They tried to have a twist, but it was just so confusing. Because I'm like... How did he get it? I was literally like, I don't understand. Like, she's freaking out. She's like, how did you get in? And he, by the way, Emilio Estevez on this day decided to take it to 11. And he's like, look at me.
Yeah, then I was kind of disturbed by how violent that scene was. Yeah. He like throws her down on the couch and holds her down. I'm like, you're supposed to be in love with this woman.
Yeah, and for him, it's only been 2 days.
Nibble on my ear.
Yeah, I was hoping that was going to come. Yeah, that was really uncomfortable. Like, I think Rene Russo was wise to be like, you're done.
And if you're, you know, if clearly she recognizes what you look like, but not who you are, don't throw her down on the couch and say, look at me. She's already looked at you. Say something like, don't you remember? This is what I said that morning.
Yeah. Or say some of the information you have, like, hey, a lot of people have been telling me I'm a free jack.
Yeah.
And I think I travel through time and also lobotomizers. And, you know, but he provides none of this.
Just screams, look at me.
Yeah, just screams, look at me.
You look so much younger. What's going on?
Nothing's helping. So she's like, you got to get out of here. She calls security. Pretty wisely. I would say too, I kind of liked Rene Russo in this movie. I think
she's doing the best she can with what she had.
I know. Even at the end, I'm like, is she? I kept thinking like she was still gonna double cross him at some point because she was acting weird like the whole movie. I don't know.
The movie seems to. I think the movie kind of wants you to think that she's hardened by life or something.
I don't know.
Because every time like someone like does something like turns on Emilio Estevez, I'm like, oh, she set him up, and then she's like, oh no, let him go. I'm like, oh, I guess she didn't set him up. But at the end of the movie, that would have been great.
That would have been great at the end of the movie.
The movie wants you to be suspicious of her.
Yeah, I guess.
But she's like
she did something to cause the crash or something, and she was in on it with his manager, and the money never happened. And now that this whole freejacking thing is a thing, she has this opportune second chance that she wasn't expecting. That would have been a more interesting movie.
I didn't get that at all.
What?
That she? I didn't feel suspicious
of
her at all.
Oh, really?
She just acted weird the whole time. She was acting weird.
I think they wanted the audience to be like, oh, is she more committed to her corporate job at this business?
There's a lot of double crosses in this movie. I mean, between the same two factions.
Maybe it's because there were so many double crosses where I was thinking, like,
you start to lose faith. Like, sometimes Mick Jagger hates Emilio Estevez. Sometimes he likes him. Sometimes he's working for Jonathan Banks. Sometimes he's working for Anthony Hopkins. Sometimes he's out for his own interests. He himself lie detector tests one of his own men and kind of laughs at him and says, why do you do me a loyalty check? He said, no, mate. Just checking the machine.
Yeah, which never
And
went
I was
anywhere.
Like,
never
that's kind anywhere. Of, a, that was Australian. Yeah. I apologize, yeah, Nick.
That was
I apologize, Nick, but you know, I wouldn't dare to mock you. But the scene was good, but it, again, added this layer of we can't trust anybody to this film.
Yeah.
Right?
I get the, you know, feeling that you can't trust anybody, but I kind of saw her as more of trying to figure out if she could trust Emilio Estevez, not really.
Yeah.
If she, you know, if she.
She does kind of basically believe him, like when Mick Jagger says that we're looking for what's his name?
Alex
Furlong. We're looking for Furlong. Where is he? We know he was here. And then she realizes, oh no, he must be a free jack.
Yeah, he hasn't changed.
Well, she should be thinking, why didn't he tell me any of this? Security gets called, and Emilio Estevez has already escaped, or he's already outside the building.
Yeah, he's...
Now, he's... By the way, he's fine. No one, he's on foot. No one knows anything about him. What does he do? He steals the most suspicious vehicle he could and drives it like a madman to the point where literally everyone's like, whoa! Like,
look at that. A champagne truck
that has no way to hold the champagne bottles in.
Like, they would have to follow
him. It looks like a float in a parade.
They don't even know what's going on until he takes a corner on two wheels in a champagne truck.
You know what's sad? That this champagne truck was the most realistic vehicle to to any other vehicle in this movie. Yeah. Was this parade float of a car.
Yeah.
That's the one car that was the most believable.
This, so now we get the real
the
car
ice cream
chase.
Truck and chill factor.
Which at some point they had a POV camera that somebody who worked in this movie was like, we are getting our money's worth of this POV camera. I don't care.
Well, they had a weird thing with, like, there was like a laptop in the champagne truck too that Mick Jagger had
the lid kept opening or the screen kept opening,
right?
And that was I was just shaking my head when Emilio Estevez shuts it and Mick Jagger says, oh, I'm afraid of the dark.
It's like FaceTime if you couldn't control your own iPad.
They have sort of this weird like dynamic going that I thought was kind of clever, but the way it was presented was just stupid.
Mick Jagger spent a lot of time in this movie just like standing with his head outside of a tank.
Well, yeah. You know what? I thought of that too. Mick Jagger, who again, I didn't think was terrible, he also never gets to act with anyone.
He never gets to act.
He eventually does later on. I mean, and he acts with his own henchmen.
Yeah, but
he only ever says like three words at a time too, if you notice.
He has a lot
of short lines. There was like a lot of like short lines, so he couldn't. So he didn't have too much to work with, but.
But they really didn't get him. Like, I feel like maybe somebody was worried that he was going to be terrible or something and they could cut him out because he's just... He has that one scene with Emilio Estevez later and then he's in the big green screen scene later on. But, like, other than that, he's just sort of on his own doing lines.
Yeah, he kind of has his own thing with Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
He's actually had a much bigger part than I expect.
Or Izai Morales. He does have the scenes with Izai Morales, who's... Probably the relationship I was the most interested in this movie was Jagger and Izai Morales. And like, whoa, does he trust that guy or not? I want to know more about this.
Oh, there was also the Fabergé egg scene.
Oh,
with
Octopus is called back.
That's true. Yeah.
So we kind of haven't mentioned it yet, but you find out that Mick Jagger is working for Jonathan Banks, who is working for this mysterious old guy who's in a computer who needs a body.
Right.
And so he's like giving him directions like, you have to get Emilio Estevez, take him alive or whatever. And
right.
So he's been working for him and they have a thing where they're constantly kind of bickering back and forth.
Right. Right. And, you know, at the same time, Emilio Estevez is dropping 90s zingers or non-zingers. The favorite one I wrote down is like in the middle of this chase. And there's like guys, you know, the like henchmen climbing onto the champagne truck, and Emilio Estevez is like, "Ha ha! Mom told me never to pick up hitchhikers." Yeah. And I'm like, "That's not like no, like that's not a zinger. Like that's there's no wit to that. There's not even a play on word. It's just like no, that's stupid. Like and these are the kind of like and he's also laughing at his own zingers.
Well, this is also the only moment where he does one-liners.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a recurring thing where,
I read that they reshot some stuff to add humor to it, so that's probably why.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Which I think also explains a little of the emotional roller coaster that is.
That might explain the laptop sequence.
Yes.
Yeah, they only had Mick Jagger for like a day, so they shot him in front of a screen and they matted him into a little screen, had a stand in, like open it up and close it.
I think that
makes sense.
I think that might be it.
Yeah.
So the car chase wraps up with like Mick. Somehow he's on a bridge that's he drives onto a bridge that's closed off.
Yeah.
And Mick Jagger's like, "Hey man, give it up. Like you're on like a 200-foot bridge. The bridge is closed off." And Emilio Estevez dives out of a moving car
at the very last second.
Actually, he accelerates the car, which makes no sense.
It's a replaying of his death.
Should have gotten a free jacket at that point too.
To like the 30th century.
Yeah, and then he dives out of a moving car and then falls like 100 feet into a river. He would be
annihilated.
Just mashed potatoes.
And he dove head first.
Head first. the kinetic energy that would have been yeah. like you don't by jumping out of a moving car, you don't lose that momentum. Yeah. You still have it.
Well,
you see,
he was saved by his brain function.
It was
the way he dived into the water that made the water not like concrete.
Right. That must be it.
This would have been gruesome.
And at the very least, there was like a 50% chance he would have drowned had he survived the fall. So this is like completely unrealistic.
And they also throw in, I don't know if you caught the line.
Yeah, the line from Mick Jagger of, if he drinks any of that, I'm out of a job. Which goes nowhere.
Nowhere. Like, that never comes back.
Seem concerned that he just plummeted 200 feet into the...
Yeah.
Into the river. After being in a car it's going like, don't drink miles an hour. Yeah, don't drink it. I hope that dead guy doesn't drink the water. I don't know why he did say that, because we then... Like,
I think it was just like a joke.
I was expecting something like, you know, as he's coughing when he gets out of the river, if the guy's like, uh-oh, did you drink any of it? Or some sort of sickness or...
Because earlier David Johansen had also dropped that kind of classic like 90s environmentalism message of like, oh,
they've been living with no ozone.
Yeah, there's no ozone and pollution and like, you know, and so I was like, oh, is there something wrong? You know, is this another ticking clock that they're putting in of like he's poisoned now? But it's like, nope.
He goes nowhere.
Yeah, he gets out of the water, like coughing up water and stuff.
Don't drink the water.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay. Like... All right, and so he comes out of the water. I'm really at a loss for what happens in this scene.
I kept waiting for this guy to come back.
I thought he would because he's not a name, but he's like a face I recognize.
Was he recognizable back then?
He was in Silence of the Lambs with Anthony Hopkins, which I thought was interesting.
I think it's Frankie Faison. Yeah. And
so he was, I mean, he'd been in stuff, and then he's just like a bum, like, hanging out by the river.
He's a character actor of note. He's done television and film. He's a recognizable guy.
I kept waiting for him to be like, I don't know if anybody's seen John Wick 2.
Not yet.
Okay, then I won't say anything. But no, I kept waiting for him to come back with like a homeless army to defend him or something like that. Like later on in the big confrontation scene where there's like three sides fighting and there's no explanation to it. I was waiting for him to come in and like come to Emilio Estevez's aid like with a whole bunch of, you know.
Like in Waxwork when the old people rise against.
Don't spoil it. it's a crazy scene for a couple reasons. Because Frankie Faison, first of all, talks Emilio Estevez out of suicide, which is pretty relevant considering Emilio Estevez essentially just attempted suicide. so he is right on point there. But
one would think that after surviving that, you may be like, "Wow, well, I guess I have a reason to live. Why would I?"
Yeah, I don't really know why.
I'm indestructible.
I'm not sure why he was suicidal, but you know, I also loved that it's almost like a teeter-totter. I think Frankie Faison is realizing, like, wow, Emilio Estevez is bringing literally zero to this. Yeah. So I'm going to bring 200%. Yeah. So we will average out at a 100%. Yeah. And at the end, Emilio Estevez is like, you're right, homeless guy. I'm not going to commit suicide. Well, off to try to find Rene Russo. Who I've already found previously, and talk to her. And then the Frankie Faison character is like, yeah, all right. Like, where after Emilio Estevez is like, yeah, all right, Alex Furlong. And I'm like, so how did Frankie Faison know who he was?
Yeah, that's another reason why that's I was right. waiting for yeah, him to come back. Because it seemed like there was way more to the character
that he wasn't
just a bum under a bridge, that he was, you know, somebody that... had some sort of power or influence or, you know, he knew things.
He must have just seen that giant billboard that was hanging over Manhattan with...
A lot of them said suicide on them. A lot of those billboards.
Suicide assistance.
Suicide assistance, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just goes to show you how bleak the future is.
Yeah. I think it was for the audience. Like, if you're watching this movie and you might need suicide assistance, kind of like in The Screaming Skull where they say, you know, if you die during the movie because it's so scary, we'll pay for your funeral.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Maybe they were worried about that.
Yeah.
So now Rene Russo, due to no help from the Emilio Estevez character, now realizes, oh, Alex Furlong is alive. So she takes her assistant and is like, let's go down to the homeless camp and see what...
Because she knows where he would go if he was upset.
The homeless kid.
Right.
That's where he still needs to go.
Actually, you're right. Why would she assume this is the place to be?
Well, I took that as, like, that used to be the park that he would go to or something like that.
Oh, wow. You're giving... Okay, maybe.
Now it's turned into the... burning barrels.
Then I got really distracted by the homeless camp with the guy who's got a really fancy saxophone.
Oh, yeah,
in the homeless
camp.
I would love to have seen Roddy Piper here.
I was just thinking that, They Live.
And
Keith David. I think that would have been great to see them, like, in the background, like, fighting about sunglasses, I think.
That would have been a great moment. And it comes out that...
We've been fighting for 18 years.
I think this is where they reveal that Mick Jagger opened the door. She's like, no, Emilio Estevez, Mick Jagger opened the door. That's why I didn't know how you got in. And to which point he should be like, I still don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. What is a free jack? Would someone please just tell me?
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit too about the chemistry between Emilio Estevez and Rene Russo in this movie?
There's nothing to talk about.
That might be why I kept waiting for her to turn on, because it just felt like no chemistry.
It is less than zero. Yeah. I mean, it's not even the absence of. It seems to be a vacuum of chemistry to the point where at one point she just kind of gives him a hug, like the kind of hug you'd give your aunt at a family reunion. This is super. They must. I think maybe they hated each. Like, don't you feel like maybe they hated each other in real life or something?
I don't know. I felt like they did in the first scene.
In the Days of Thunder scene, they seem to have chemistry.
When she like wakes him up,
the rest of it, no.
Yeah. In the future, she has like no interest in him, or
because she's older now.
she's very old.
She's very old
and wrinkly.
She's like 7 days older. Yeah. So she's matured.
It would have made sense if like she was.
She let her hair
like,
down.
If she had gotten married or something, or she's like, well, I can't be romantically interested in this guy because I'm married, right? And whatever. But she's not.
Well, when they did that hug, that like pat on the back hug, that's where I started thinking like, oh, I wonder if it's going to come out that she's a free jack, or like that she has someone else's consciousness in her mind.
Oh, that would have been. Why did they do that? That's a great idea.
Well, because I kept thinking there's going to be another character in this movie who actually has had a consciousness transplant. They can't just give it to us as a theory. They're going to have to give us like a proof of concept of that. So I'm like, someone's a transplanted consciousness. No one is. Emilio Estevez would have been the first if it happened. So then the two of them go to a crazy 90s, like they go to essentially every 90s science fiction club.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the club from Blade. It's the club from everything. You've been to this club. If you saw a sci-fi movie in the 90s, you've been here. To where things really devolve. Like, maybe this is where you start to realize, like, oh, no, the Alex Furlong character is just an idiot. Like, he's... You can't be rooting for this guy because he's just completely a moron.
Right? Even Rene Russo isn't.
He does a live TV interview.
Because he got drugged.
After drinking this drink.
A bartender offered him a drink for free for no reason. That doesn't seem...
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's free, Jack.
Slam it down. And he immediately is hammered that the movie has no qualms in being like, hey, let's reinforce this by having the screen go all double vision so that everyone understands that Emilio Estevez is hammered. And he does a live TV interview with Jerry Hall, who is Mick Jagger's... Maybe they were together at this point. She used to be Mick Jagger's girlfriend.
Okay.
That would make sense.
And... And I love this, where now Rene Russo's like, hey, hold on, my free jack is doing a live TV interview 10 feet over there.
Maybe we should get
I guess I gotta walk this down a little bit. And I'm trying to think of where things go.
They go to that guy's house.
Yeah, they escape to the friend's house.
Because they went there to meet one of her friends. Who was waiting to double cross him too. Did he ever double cross him? I don't know.
No, he just kind of disappeared.
She says, he's gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Or they go to his house or her house. I can't remember one of them. Probably his, because hers is probably.
It was like one of his safe houses.
Oh, okay.
Was the impression that I got. And then, he just disappears. There's a whole question of if he and Rene Russo are a thing, but that doesn't go anywhere.
That goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Emilio Estevez, again, who's instantly suspicious of everything that's happening, is like, oh, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, he's with whatever, the Rebel Alliance can help us. Oh, it's your boyfriend. And even the guy is like totally cool. He's like, okay, take it easy, man.
Yeah.
So he convinces her to call Anthony Hopkins. and see if he can help them out with this.
Right.
Because he trusts Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
He basically says, like, I'll see what I can do. I'll call you back. Something like that.
Yeah. Anthony Hopkins might as well say, like, clearly you haven't seen Fair Game. You shouldn't be calling anybody. But
yeah. So then, the friend just disappears. She literally says, like, oh, he's gone. And it's like the most
that's his exit of the movie.
Yeah. And it's like literally the most awkward scene follows here where he's like trying to kiss her and she's like, oh, I'm so much older now. And he's like, oh, you're beautiful. And it's like an awkward, like, where he kisses. It's just very awkward and there's no chemistry.
I would have given this movie $5 if they could have put in a line where Emilio Estevez was like, you really don't look any older.
Well, the creepiest part about the scene is when he tries to kiss her, he doesn't like lean in for a kiss.
Right.
He kisses his finger and then tries to put his hand in her face. And that's when she turns down.
That's right.
It's like, I'm not comfortable with that.
Oh, is this really what you're opening with?
It's like this creepy, like his finger is, you know, inching towards her lips. And I would have turned away from that too.
Yeah. It was just uncomfortable. It was a weird scene.
Very weird. And right after this, we get... And to say this is the most random scene in the movie says a lot, but when Amanda Plummer comes back into the movie for one scene...
Yes.
Because Jonathan Banks has, like... I don't know if this is shot in the church or if it's in his office, but
I thought,
like,
that it was in the... I can't remember.
I thought the really Bonejackers kidnapped her and took her to his office.
Maybe that's what it is.
I think there were guys with guns in the background.
She comes... he's talking to her, trying to find out, like, what's going on with Alex Furlong. But it's like, no, this is all information you already have, right. Jonathan Banks. Like, none of this is relevant.
Yeah. That, it seemed to me like just another excuse to bring the swearing nun back to...
Yeah, it didn't make sense, because...
Yeah.
Like,
maybe this is a reshoot for more lightheartedness, because he slaps her once.
There's a joke at the end of it.
He slaps her, and then she says, oh, I always... the good Bible says you have to turn the other cheek, and then she kicks him in the nuts.
Yeah, you're right. You're
100%
right.
Which was a funny scene, but in a different movie it would work. Jonathan Banks is kind of like cross-eyed, going, ooh. You know,
in a Home Alone movie, that would work.
This is right out of a Home. Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, this is a reshoot. Yeah, because they were probably like, weird. Oh, Amanda Plummer was funny. Let's see if we can.
As I watched it, I felt weird about it. Like,
it wasn't a bad scene, like, as an individual thing.
He's interrogating her about when she met up with this guy, but she sent him to the other guy who then called it in and, like, reported it. So it's like, what's it even matter? Because...
Yeah, what information would she have that was relevant?
Because she sent him to a guy who reported him to you and tried to help you catch him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just didn't seem like it had any bearing on anything.
And McJagger's already on his heels. Why would he need to interrogate anyone? He's already got McJagger on the case.
And this got me really confused, because now I'm like, okay... There's the Rene Russo friend character who I kept thinking was going to come back into the movie.
Yeah.
There's the Frankie Faison character who I think is coming back. There's the Amanda Plummer character who I think is coming back. And I'm like, how are these... This is where I started to go. How are these characters coming back? Because none of them are connected to each other. Unless there's a party scene at the end. I don't know how you can bring these characters in. Or unless there's like a thread that this movie is
waiting
to reveal. Yeah.
And they get married at the end and all the...
And all of them were in the audience? Yeah, I don't...
And where the homeless guy I met on the shore.
I did not... So yeah, that was really... That makes more sense to think of it as a reshoot.
Mm-hmm.
So now they cut back to Rene Russo... and Emilio Estevez, and there's a great scene where, again, the chemistry is electric, where she's like, hey, you gotta go. I got work to do. I work for this big company, and we got business deals going on.
Land acquisitions, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah, so she sends Emilio Estevez with her assistant, right? Yeah.
Assistant valet guy. I don't know what exactly
bodyguard,
was, but
driver.
Bodyguard, driver, like everything.
Sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, like a character who suddenly gets really important in the movie, and then, at least he exits the movie, they kill him, so it's like, well, at least I don't have to worry if he's coming back. He's like one of the agents from Die Hard. Like, remember there's
I recognize. I couldn't remember if it was something like that or if it was from. Oh, was it Die Hard? So I was thinking
he
was in one of the.
He and Robert Davi are agents. Are the two FBI?
Agent Johnson and Special Agent Johnson.
Special Agent Johnson.
I've always known him as Agent Johnson.
But was he also?
He was Felix.
Was he also
Felix and Never Say Never Again?
Okay, Never Say Never. Really?
Oh, yeah,
the unofficial Bond film. He's Felix.
Because I was thinking for some reason, like License to Kill or
He might be also in License to Kill.
In a different role. Because I've only seen Never Say Never Again like once. I don't think I recognize him there.
Yeah. Never Say Never Again. We should do that one, by the way. He's a regular face. He's a regular face in 80s and 90s movies.
So basically, she sends it with him. So she's got a boat, and they're going to take the boat somewhere.
You make my grandmother smile.
Yeah, he kept talking about his grandma. Like, I missed something.
I was like, he's going to die. The moment he said it, I was like, he's going to die.
In the reshoots, this character clearly got cut down in the reshoots, I think. We're supposed to be a lot more attached to him than we are.
Yeah.
And he seems a lot more attached to Emilio Estevez.
He's certainly more sympathetic to the audience than the Emilio Estevez character.
Yeah.
Well, he's setting up that Emilio Estevez is, like, now a folk hero. Even though throughout the rest of the movie, Emilio Estevez has been running from everyone because everyone tries to catch him when they find out he's a free jack. Now, suddenly, the fact that he's a free jack is inspiring to people.
Yeah.
But there's nothing except an economic collapse, not really like an evil government that controls the people. So what are they going to rise up against anyway?
I got confused because he said, "You make my grandmother happy." I was like, wait, is Rene Russo's grandmother? But I'm like, wait, it's only been like 18 years. Like, what's he talking about his grandmother? Like, I thought I missed something.
I'm wondering in the reshoots if some of what was pulled out was like a Running Man-esque storyline where like people were like pro Furlong or anti Furlong or like Blade Runner future, this was like a reality show or something. Because that seemed to be what that Agent Johnson guy was talking about. Weird,
yeah. He said something like, every day you survive makes people happier. Like something like that.
It's only been like a day and a half, though.
It does feel like it's only been a day
and a half. It only has been two.
He says at one point, it's been 2 days for me. When they're in the car and Rene Russo is ditching him for work, I've moved on or something like that. And he says, it's only been 2 days for me.
Right. So, yeah, this show, if they're making a TV show out of this, they're moving fast.
Yeah.
So they're going to get on this boat, and before they can get on the boat, there's another scene where Emilio Estevez is like suspicious out of nowhere.
Right.
Because he's like, there's like no one here. And then all of a sudden, like the boat explodes.
Right.
And then it's like Mick Jagger and his people come out.
Right.
And then like Rene Russo gets out of her car, and then her car gets rocketed.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, so I figured that Mick Jagger blew up her car too, so they couldn't escape. But then Mick Jagger's like, what was that? Who did that? And I was like, oh, I guess, okay, so it's the rebels now also, or whoever they are.
It's the Jonathan Banks people.
Factions. Yeah. Because
I still know that, though.
Yeah, at this point, we have no idea who did that.
You don't know that, right?
Yeah,
so because at one point, Jonathan Banks tells Mick Jagger he's fired, and he starts kind of saying, like, I'll take care of it.
Right.
But you're right. They never make a clear link to, like, what's going on here. Also, here's an idea. If you're Mick Jagger, why not have Emilio Estevez get on the boat? You then have him captive. Why blow up the contained thing that you could put him on?
Especially when he wants to keep him alive with, quote-unquote, out of scratch.
It would be the easiest thing in the world. You would have him confined to a boat. You know?
I just feel like every time in this movie that Mick Jagger actually has Emilio Estevez in his sights, he gets saved by the other.
Yes.
Which I guess makes sense in... Well, I guess not. It doesn't really make sense. I don't know.
It should be the other way around. Yeah, it does not make sense. Yeah. So now there's this kind of like crazy shootout between the like Jonathan Banks freelancers and Mick Jagger's team and Emilio Estevez and Agent Johnson. If anybody could track the geography of this scene, they are a genius. I never knew where anyone was in relation to anyone else.
No. Yep.
Including at times, I didn't even know where Agent Johnson was in relationship to Emilio Estevez, and they're working together.
Yeah.
I don't, like, at one point, the Agent Johnson's like, oh, cover me, and he somehow traverses the entire, like, map, basically, and ends up behind the bad guys. I'm like, I give up. That guy gets shot and killed, and he's like,
well, then he, like, jokes about double-crossing him or something, because, like, they're, like, pinned down, and Emilio Estevez is like, oh, we're stuck, whatever, and the other guy's like, what do you mean, we, white boy? And it was like, oh, I'm just kidding. It's like,
Totally awkward joke.
Yeah, it was just weird.
There's a lot of times in this movie where people say something that you actually take as an audience member as serious, and then the character's like, I'm just kidding. And when he dies, he's like, hey, keep my grandma smiling. To which one I think Emilio Estevez is like, I'll do my best. I'm not really sure what role I play in
At first, I don't know, like, I heard it wrong. Like, I was... I think I was kind of zoned out at this point, but I thought he said, keep my grandmother's wallet. I was like, what did I miss with his grandmother? He might as well
have said that, yeah.
And then I was like, okay, he must have said smiley, because it was just, I was so confused about this grandmother thing.
You know what's incredible, and I have notes on this at this point, up until this point, this movie has no plot.
Literally,
there's like no plot. It's just like guy just gets scenes. Rocketed into the future, guy runs around the future. Like nothing is coherent. There's nothing kind of pushing him forward. There's right. no momentum for him. There's no like, oh, if I accomplish this,
yeah, he has no goal aside from
like
not getting caught. Yeah,
he's still trying
but
to figure
no,
out what's going on.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm like, this is shockingly yeah. like what this script. Because at this point, I started to be like, is this based on a book or is it based on like a 5-page short story? Because there's nothing here.
The beginning credits, which was how I figured out what the movie was going to be about since I knew nothing. The beginning credits do say it's based on a novel, Immortality Inc.
Right. I'm wondering if it was really a novel or if it was like a novella.
Short novel.
Yeah. Which actually kind of, now that I think it reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode that I just saw recently too, where like these old people are like buying a new young bodies to get their minds transplanted into so they could live longer. You know what I mean?
Well, it's right. a pretty, it's like I mean, it's same... a, it's a kind of a trope. I mean,
right.
Dollhouse, Transcendence, Selfless. Like there's a lot of TV shows and movies that do this kind of consciousness transfer.
Yeah.
To gain immortality thing. So it's, you know, mm-hmm. like I said, as soon as I saw that it was based on something called Immortality Inc., I'm like, oh, there's going to be some sort of...
Well, and again, worth mentioning...
There'll be a lot of bone jacking in this movie.
For a movie that's in theory about consciousness transferring, we see no consciences transferred.
Yeah. No. You know? See half of one.
Yeah.
And the movie isn't even about immortality. The movie is about man on the run. That's what the movie's about.
Right.
Yeah. So why even make it about that anyway? You could have it be anything. You could...
I think it's they took the really lazy approach of like, oh, let's make it Hitchcockian yeah. about like a man on the run. But like, well, no, usually in Hitchcock movies, there was like character development and
structure.
Like structure and like the plot actually had some kind of forward momentum. Yeah. And like,
not
this
one.
Doesn't. Yeah.
Intrigue.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, so he, I don't know, like Emilio Estevez somehow escapes. There's one point where he literally is helpless, and for some reason the guard doesn't just capture him, giving Emilio Estevez a crazy opportunity to blue lightning electrocute him.
Uh-huh. He did.
A trap that only could have worked with the cooperation of...
Did he have some sort of quip there? I can't remember now.
I think he did. I think
remember.
There was.
Didn't your mother ever tell you not to stick a fork in a light socket?
It was something like that. Like not. Yeah. Whoever was doing.
Shocking how I got the drop on you.
That would have been better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he fights off this. There's like yeah he's fighting this guy. He fights him off, and then Mick Jagger's there.
Oh, but he takes the guy's helmet. Which I really think the entire purpose of that was so that they could have the parallel scene of Mick Jagger taking off his helmet in the fog and Emilio Estevez taking off his helmet in the fog. I think that was the only point of him taking the guard's helmet.
Put on his helmet so you can take it off.
It sounded like he could like listen in their transmission so he could see where they were, or maybe the helmet would protect his head from a blaster bolt.
There was the moment, which I thought was hilarious and I laughed at, when he first meets this guard where he hits this guy over the head with something, but the guy's wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
Like he hits the helmet over the head and does absolutely nothing except get himself in trouble.
Yeah. And gives away his own position. Yeah. Again, the Emilio Estevez character is an idiot in this movie. Yeah.
He's new to the whole murderous, sociopathic 80s action movie hero.
Yeah.
He's new to that. He's new to that.
So then
Schwarzenegger did it better.
So then he meets up with Mick Jagger, and Mick Jagger, he like demands that Mick Jagger tell him who...
Well, because he shoots...
Well, he saves Mick Jagger's life here.
Because what happened in a weird scene, Mick Jagger's hunting Emilio Estevez, and Emilio Estevez shoots the freelancers who are apparently about to kill Mick Jagger?
I guess, yeah.
I guess. Again, the geography is not great.
Yeah. Then he's like, I saved your life, or I spared your life, whatever. Tell me who is who's responsible for this? Who's doing?
Tell me who's behind this. Yeah. And Mick Jagger might well have said, "You're an idiot." It's Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Like everyone sitting in the theater. Mick Jagger may as well have like pulled a Jim from The Office and looked at the screen.
Shrugged his shoulders, like, yeah. "What do you think?"
Yeah.
Don't know.
So then, like, all his men just appear out of nowhere.
Right.
And he's like
literally, they're just like,
they're just
take like 20 minutes to establish that they're all standing there.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, Or he's like, I saved your life. He's like, I'll give you a 5-minute head start.
And then, he starts counting. Counts one Mississippi, two Mississippi.
I was really hoping they would go back to him and he'd be like, 347 yeah. Mississippi.
Yeah. And he really does this. I'm like, wow, okay. Like,
and he even covers his eyes.
I thought maybe he was being cute, like he was trying to inject some like playfulness to the character. I'll give you a head start. One Mississippi, two, like he's messing with him.
Yeah.
But does that mean this was one of the reshoots, or is that Mick Jagger just saying, wouldn't this character be just a little more playful because we established
it's just a terrible script.
Well, they just did not be captured at this point, so
yeah, they seem to not be captured.
Go, I guess.
Yeah, and I think maybe there's a little bit of that, but they've failed to establish that in anything prior to this.
They're kind of trying to set it up like that they kind of are becoming friends, kind of almost
like rivals. Yeah,
this is like a weird frenemies situation.
Yeah. Like, it was just it didn't really work.
It was
weird.
Yeah, it's really dumb. So, I mean, so now Emilio Estevez, how does he gets back to Rene Russo?
Yeah, I think he just goes back to the dock or whatever, and he sees her car is destroyed.
And he's like... And
she pops up again, I don't know, I can't remember.
Yeah, and he's like, gets really upset, and he's like, hey, I want to meet this guy who wants to look like me. And I'm like, dude, why do you care? Why do you care?
Just leave, escape. I don't know if he knows or not. I can't remember. But Anthony Hopkins only has like a limited amount of time before he basically is just dead.
Right.
Well, they don't know that he's dead yet.
Even the audience.
Well, I mean, the person who—that's what I'm saying—is like we know that the person who's responsible for this, or who's making this all happen,
right,
is in this switchboard, whatever they call it. And he's only got, at the beginning of the movie, it's 36 hours, and then he's toast. They can't do anything for him.
Right.
And so at this point, it's less and less time. But I don't know if they know that at this point, and me the rest of us.
I don't think they do. And I would just say, it doesn't matter to him. Like, yeah. I would say, dude, it doesn't matter who this guy is, and why risk your life to be like, I really need to meet a guy who wants to look like this. You know, like...
The guy's been trying to catch me this entire movie. I'm going to go just walk into his...
He wants to catch me? Ha ha! I'm going to bring myself to him. Yeah, which is what he ends up doing. Yeah. It's so stupid.
So he runs away from Mick Jagger, who's going to capture him and bring him to Anthony Hopkins, and goes to Anthony Hopkins...
And just goes to Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. Like, he might as well have just said to Mick Jagger in that scene, take me to the guy who wants to look like me.
That's what he
just wants to finish the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we just finish this now?
And now things really start to go off the rails. Like, as if this movie's not dumb enough already. From the moment Rene Russo and Emilio Estevez walk into the corporate headquarters, like, buckle up, you know... So they let him walk in. They go up and they see Jonathan Banks. They all get to look at the goofiest dummy of Anthony Hopkins.
in a liquid tank of some sort.
Which makes me think that they didn't actually have Anthony Hopkins for very much time. Because if they couldn't literally just say, like, hey, Anthony Hopkins, can you lie in this tank for 10 seconds with your eyes closed? We need to get one shot. They're probably like, guys, we don't have him that long. We don't. That's one shot too many. And it comes out that Jonathan Banks doesn't want, he says he doesn't want Emilio Estevez to, or Anthony Hopkins' consciousness to transfer into Emilio Estevez, because then Jonathan Banks can become CEO of...
Yeah, he's like next
in line. If Anthony Hopkins just flat out dies.
Right.
And doesn't come back, then he gets to run the company.
And here's where we finally explain that the second faction is Jonathan Banks people purposely disrupting the attempts of Mick Jagger, who is working for Anthony Hopkins, to get to Emilio Estevez. But then why is Mick Jagger also working with Jonathan Banks?
Why earlier was he...
I think he's trying to keep up appearances so that it doesn't look like he purposely had Anthony Hopkins die. He wants to look like, oh, we just didn't get him in time.
Okay, so they're kind of...
I think it
doesn't make sense. Or like, even if you're
over the complicated villain plot, just kill Anthony Hopkins, just hit the delete key,
or
then say, okay guys, just let him d- Just let him run away, okay? You'll get paid. Don't worry.
Exactly. Yeah. The best thing for Jonathan Banks to have done was to do nothing. Nothing would have been the best strategy. Or even at this point when you're like, oh my God, this idiot came here. Like, he could have just been like, sorry, dummy. Like, Anthony Hopkins, the guy, he's dead. Why don't you go down to our gift shop? hey, free dinner on us. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so, you know what I mean? Like, why? Why would he spill out like his that, plan? Yeah.
After all his efforts to keep him away, he just, like, comes in.
I don't. Or even just literally say, like, hey, can you just sit in this room for 30 minutes or something? Yeah. Like, there's so many other things that character could have done than what he does.
Yeah, so he tells him, I don't want this to happen.
Right.
You can leave. And then they leave and he calls someone and says, kill them.
Right. Like, what's the point? By the way,
they don't stand to threaten him unless his theory is, well, maybe people will think that he mind-jacked? I don't know. Swapped?
Well, and Emilio Estevez and Rene Russo are like, well, all right, I guess we'll just leave. And they get into the elevator.
And here's another time where Emilio Estevez is too suspicious.
Super suspicious. It goes almost to, like, he's now psychic.
Yeah.
In the course of an elevator ride, they go from being not suspicious at all to, when those doors open, we're going to have a plan.
Yeah. It's too easy. He wouldn't let us go there. I was like, why wouldn't he? He just told you he doesn't want you to be here.
Yeah.
He just gets way too suspicious. I mean, he's right, but at the same time, it's like...
It's crazy. So the elevator doors open, and then Mick Jagger and his team come in and shoot all of Jonathan Banks' guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're... And at the same time, Emilio Estevez and Rene Russo are going back up in the elevator, and now we're kind of into the Lucy... prequel.
Yeah.
So do they kind of imply, or don't, I think they just flat out say it, that Anthony Hopkins is like controlling the elevator through the computer?
Yes.
He's in the computer?
So. Yeah. Yes.
Because they're going to the 100th floor because there's a fire escape, but it keeps going to the 200th floor or whatever, to the very top of the building.
Right. Exactly. Which is via...
Inside this giant jack. Did anybody catch that? Like playing jacks.
Oh, God.
The whole tower at the top is a giant jack. There's a big jack. It's the panel where he's going to type in the...
You're right.
Bone jacking, free jacking.
I think you are right.
This film is jacked.
I
love it.
So they come
bring it
out,
on.
And that's when it really becomes apparent, like, oh, this movie wants to be Blade Runner. You know,
yeah.
As they... kind of walk in, you know, come off the elevator into this like weird space, and things get real freaky with a lot of like Lawnmower Man style CGI. And
well, we almost get another like fake out. We do get another fake out monologue because before Jonathan Banks is like, you know what, we're all on the same team. Why don't you go? And then kill them. Well, now it's. Oh, this was so terrible that I put you through this. I feel responsible. Oh, the plan was to steal his body because I was in love with you and I didn't want to.
This is Anthony Hopkins.
And then he tries to take his body anyway. He makes it look like I'm going to give you guys my money and wealth. You pretend you're me.
But wait, let's break this down a little
this
more.
This is so confusing.
Because Anthony Hopkins first reveals
layers.
That he did this all because he wanted to get with Rene Russo. So essentially, at this point in the movie, the audience is left to go, so the big bad villain's motivation was just to bang Rene Russo? Yeah, like, that's the whole motivation behind everything we've just sat through was an old man who was like, hey, Rene Russo's hot.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, I am really sorry about this. The process did not shorten your natural life. To which point, Emilio Estevez has the line in the movie where he's like, oh, what about my unnatural life?
I was trying to like, figure that out for like 5 minutes.
I wanted them to do it office style and just have Anthony Hopkins like look in the screen and be like, I can't help this character.
But again, so I'm thinking here too, because like, so he wants to become Emilio Estevez because he says to her like, there's no amount of money or whatever or power or whatever that would make you feel the way about me that I feel about you.
Right.
So he wants to look like her, which would make, or like him, which would make sense if like she was still in love with him, like still thought about him. But she makes a point to say like 8 times in the movie that she's moved on from him. That she's
right.
Like, you know,
Right, that she's...
And when he's back, she's not that into him. I mean, he's right there, and she's not that into him.
If suddenly, you know, your boss looks like your dead boyfriend, that's right. Not like, oh, really no, motivation to jump into bed. I mean...
It's weird.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
To which... And then...
I have trouble believing, too, that Anthony Hopkins wouldn't just be able to get Rene Russo on his own. I mean, he's a, you know, successful guy. Yep. He's
charming, wealthy. Yeah.
She's super old, apparently, so they're probably close in age.
Yeah, I mean...
And...
Yeah, exactly. And then the Anthony Hopkins character at one point is like, you know what? This is not cool.
You know, he says like, clarity. What?
I changed my mind on all of this. This is really not cool.
And he calls it Mick Jagger on like a video phone or whatever, or like a hologram screen. And he's like, oh, just drop it. Don't, you know, stop. Yeah. And he's like, initiate plan 7 or something like that. He says something kind of vague and mysterious like that.
Right. And he's like, Emilio Estevez here, can you just start typing some numbers onto this iPad? To which Emilio Estevez, who has been suspicious of everything that's happening in the world, is like, certainly I'll start typing numbers onto his screen.
Well, he gets suspicious here too, though.
He does eventually get suspicious. And I was waiting for him to try to like plug in a different code or something.
Yeah. But then he's like, you're stalling. It's like, when he's stalling.
And then I'm like, what do they mean he's stalling? Then Anthony Hopkins is like, yeah, when I said I was just kidding, I was just kidding about just kidding. I do want to take over your body.
Because then Mick Jagger comes. I guess it took a while for Mick Jagger to come from the first floor to the 200th floor.
He was killing time until Mick Jagger could get there.
This is trespass level double crossing.
So Mick Jagger comes into this. Like, I don't understand how Mick Jagger comes into it, because like, Anthony Hopkins is... I don't even know where they are. Like, they're in the
spiritual switchboard.
Like, how's
Mick Jagger... So it's that classic, like the Matrix kind of thing.
So it's just a room that anyone can just walk into.
It's a holodeck.
I think... I think that they're portraying it as this is just a holodeck.
Like, but when they did, like, the whole thing where, like, it went into, like, the big eye and stuff, like, I thought they were going into his consciousness or something like that. And
he does say, welcome to my mind.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then also Mick Jagger comes and it's like, oh, everyone's just welcoming Anthony Hopkins' mind. Like,
it's an open party.
There's a party in my mind and everyone's invited.
Yeah. That's really what it is, yeah. Hey, nobody locked the door, right? Yeah.
So they come in and he's like, I'll grab him, you know, and force him to put his hands on this jack thing that is going to mind meld them and do all this stuff. And
right.
So they start this mind meld process where they're deleting, I guess, Emilio Estevez's mind and transplanting Anthony Hopkins' mind into him, and you get this whole thing, you go into his mind, and it's like, you see moments from the movie that you've already seen, like, deleting all this this is weird.
I also have to think there wasn't much to delete in Emilio Estevez's mind. Right. I mean, they've made it pretty clear.
They replay the accident again, and he goes, oh!
Yeah.
And there are no memories before the accident that they ever show or anything. Yeah. It's just like...
They got their mileage out of that crash footage, too. I mean,
Nissan
whatever.
Paid a lot to have this movie.
Jonathan Banks is watching it at one point, like on his flat screen in his office.
He's just replaying it everywhere.
Oh, which... makes me realize one of the things that I didn't like from Emilio Estevez's character, when Jonathan Banks is watching it and he shows it to them, because Emilio Estevez had a gun to Rene Russo's head to get into the office at some point. He never even apologizes. Like, he just pointed a gun at the woman he loves, and he's never like, hey, sorry, I had to do that.
And he implies later, later on, he checks it. There was one in the chamber.
Yeah.
There was one in the chamber. It's not like he said, sorry, go do it, and he like unloads the gun or something.
Yeah. If his finger had like twitched, it would have been like, yeah.
And I like how too, like, to go back a second, he's got one bullet in the chamber, which I figure like, okay, he's going to use that on Jonathan Banks or something. But when Mick Jagger's people start shooting at all of the rebel people, the Jonathan Banks people, he like just shoots one guy with the one bullet. It's like, why? They've got like machine guns. They're mowing everybody down.
Right.
You wasted your one bullet on some random guy.
Right.
That's one less random guy who's going to be firing his machine gun, Cody.
But anyway, this
mind melt is going on, and then Rene Russo grabs a gun.
Well, Jonathan Banks comes in.
Oh, you're right.
Jonathan Banks just walks into the mind.
You want something done, you got to do it yourself.
And it distracts Mick Jagger's people, and so Rene Russo grabs one of their guns and like shoots the mind melt machine.
Yeah.
And it destroys it, and
everything goes crazy.
Anthony Hopkins disappears, and like Emilio Estevez gets shot across the room.
Another unceremonious disappearance from the movie.
He's just gone.
And so then they're gonna shoot Emilio Estevez, and he starts going, "No, wait, I'm a candleless."
Yeah.
Like in To which, and everyone kind of just freezes. Like,
Is he?
And Emilio Estevez is, I guess now he's supposed to be doing bad acting. I mean, it's a bad actor doing bad acting in a movie where he's already, his character that he's playing.
I would actually say he's a better actor in this moment because he clearly changes his character, the way he stands up, the way he rolls up his sleeves, the way he speaks actually changes. So I would say that this is his best acting moment in the entire movie.
True.
My favorite part was when Mick Jagger asked one of the scientists, is he Anthony Hopkins? And the scientist is like, I don't know.
That scientist guy is amazing because he's delivering so much exposition that we probably should have had way earlier in the movie. He's like, I don't know, we did do, whatever, 20%. Sometimes a consciousness transfers in 20%. It's possible. Yeah. And I'm like, guys, I'm taking your word for it. Yeah. We've never seen this happen before.
So then Jonathan Banks is like, make him tell you his personal identification number, because only McCandless would know that.
Right.
And so Mick Jagger has it on a tricorder. And he's looking at it, and he's like, okay, tell me your personal identification number. And he starts I think he's saying the numbers from that Anthony Hopkins had in the sequence.
That he was supposed to plug in and hit delete. Yeah.
And so he's saying these numbers and Mick Jagger's like, yeah, that's right. And so Jonathan Banks starts freaking out. He's like, no, it's not possible. Because he thought he's going to be CEO, and now he's not. So he grabs a gun, and he's about to shoot him, and then the guards shoot him. And
by the way, if you're Jonathan Banks, why... The whole climax of this hinges on that Jonathan Banks is like, oh, Mick Jagger, the guy who I've been trying to kill for most of the movie, says the numbers are right? Well, right. No reason to question it.
Yeah.
All right, I guess I'll believe the guy who I've had a death contract on and who knows I'm trying to kill him. And I'm like, okay. So now Jonathan Banks is dead. Anthony Hopkins is dead. And Mick Jagger's just kind of standing there. And Rene Russo's looking at Emilio Estevez like...
Bastard. Ooh,
what's going on? Who, are you Anthony Hopkins or are you...
I think she totally believes it.
Yeah, she does at this point. Yeah.
She does. And then that great catchphrase comes back, nibble my ear.
In a second, yeah. Because he's like, I'm McCandless. Get ready. Go get ready. We're going to go out somewhere. Right. And so they get in a car and they start driving away, and then Mick Jagger and all his men are in the road. They stop him, and he's like, I knew if I watched you long enough that I would catch you slipping up or whatever. And he's like, McCandless couldn't drive. And so he's like, oh, you got me. And Mick Jagger's like, yeah, I got you.
What?
And now they are friends, and then he lets him go.
Because he's like, oh, Rene Russo, you better train him.
Mick Jagger's such a character.
Yeah. But that's where she's like, oh, is it really you, Alex? He's like, nibble my ear. I'm like, no, it really is you.
Why couldn't he have just said that in the apartment?
Or why couldn't the movie have been smarter and said and just left it at them driving away and the audience is left to decide McCandless or whatever the character's name is?
I think that would have been... I normally wouldn't like that kind of thing, but in this case, I think it would have been more interesting if there was a little uncertainty for what was going on.
Yeah.
You know? And what was... So what was Mick Jagger's motivation?
Liked him all of a sudden. This free Jack has had a really bad day. I feel guilty for being part of making this suck, so I'm just going to let him go.
I think he's just looking out for him. He's like, you better, careful about how you act.
Or maybe he was there as one last chance in case anyone else from that other faction came back.
I took it as what Cody was saying. You got to make sure you're really acting like McCandless.
Yeah.
Well, because he's choosing it. But Mick Jagger was also 100% on board with Anthony Hopkins taking over Emilio Estevez's body.
But maybe by the end of the movie, he was like, okay.
It was just a job,
but he was enforcing it. When he comes in, Anthony Hopkins calls him, and he comes in, and that when he comes in is when Anthony Hopkins is like, yeah. And it's Mick Jagger's men who are making... Emilio Estevez do the transfer.
At this point, he's already getting paid because the transfer supposedly happened.
Right.
And Anthony Hopkins is already dead. So
he's going to be the boss anyways.
This is the only... I think what the movie wants us to believe, although it doesn't set this up very well, is that basically once Rene Russo shoots the machine, Mick Jagger's probably like, all right, who's my second favorite potential boss here? Ooh, it's Jonathan Banks or this other guy who I've been chasing. Ugh, Jonathan Banks is a real Fabergé egg collecting teabag. All right, I'll take this guy. Yeah, like, yeah. I think that that's what it's trying. But he totally was on board with Anthony Hopkins until Rene Russo shot the machine. So, yeah, it's really weird. And that's just, end of the movie. Like, haha, might as well have been, like, again, probably like an awkward high five between Rene Russo and Emilio Estevez. And now, also, he's totally unfazed by this. He's now basically, like, he's the Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates of future, like, America.
Of 2009.
And but he's just
But they established these armies of have-nots, and one of his buddies, you know, died and wanted to make his grandma smile. So is he going to, like, share that wealth, or is he going to be living in the lap of luxury?
I don't know. Or maybe Frankie Faison, the bum on the, like, dock, is like, yeah. Like,
this well, is... one of the things that I was thinking is, okay, so for 2 days, his face has been plastered all over the place as a $15 million reward. So when he walks in public now, it's not like people know, oh, okay, now, you know, he made the switch. That's Anthony Hopkins now.
Right.
Like, is he still going to be hunted down by all these people that are hoping for this $15 million reward?
I think he's going to have to go up to everyone and be like, I was a free Jack.
I'm not anymore.
I am now Mr. McCandless, but yeah, it was a crazy time.
Switched to billboards, or it says now Mr. McCandless, right. The new and improved Mr. McCandless.
Uh-huh. Which they don't really. I don't. Yeah, this movie.
He'll just grow a beard. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
15 minutes. Everyone will forget it.
So I don't have a so wrong it's right, but I did pull some interesting like stats in this. As Cody was mentioning, this movie was reshot. This was sort of the original Rogue One scenario where they reshot 40% of the movie, which is a shockingly high number percentage of a movie.
Like,
this.
Like Rogue One, it's like, okay, it's going to be a big movie. You put that time and money into it, but this is like...
I mean, that's a lot of reshoots to do for a movie that's pretty terrible and probably was not good no matter what they were doing with it.
Right.
Against the director's wishes. And the director sort of wanted apparently at one point attempted to he didn't it sounds the Wikipedia page is a little weird and the article is a little weird. I guess it's in his he wrote a book about his life like and he said in it I think he wanted the reshoots director and him to be co-credited so that people would understand this wasn't entirely his movie. And this guy ended up being the second unit director, or one of the second unit directors on the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, wow. So, there you go. That's a step up.
Yeah.
Another set of terrible movies.
Yeah. And apparently Emilio Estevez believed that the first cut had too much action in it. So no danger of that in this current cut. There is not too much action. This is a fascinating, is it so bad it's good? You'd say no, Cody?
I always struggle to get through it for me. Like, with, like 20, 30 minutes left, I was like, I don't know if I can make this. It was...
It is
rough. Because I knew it was going, and I was like, I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
I was just bored with it.
So I think it depends on how you're looking at it. Like, I think if I was watching this in 1992, then it would be, okay, this is absolutely awful. But watching it in 2017, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a bad early 90s movie.
In that case, yeah.
You know. Take it for what it is. It's classic early 90s. Like, okay, whatever. But yeah, back in the early 90s, then yeah, I would think it was absolutely awful. But right now it's just,
I would say if you're a big, like, Mick Jagger fan that you would probably want, like I do with any Alice Cooper movie.
Yeah.
I'll watch it and love it because it's Alice Cooper. So if you're like a big Rolling Stones guy or, you know, or whatever, then it'd be like, oh, Mick Jagger is... like the star of this movie, basically.
Yeah.
Then you might be the
MVP.
In,
he's the most likable character in the movie. Right. He's
got the only arc.
He's the only one who has an arc. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Because
he has a German. He has a change too. His character changes.
Emilio Estevez is no different from the first frame of this movie to the end.
Yeah.
Nothing changes for him. That's true. Yeah.
I think at the end of the movie, he still doesn't know what year he came from.
Yeah.
He had to check my wristband. He got rid of that wristband, so he doesn't remember what year he came from.
I really also worry about the McCandless Corporation with Emilio Estevez running things.
That's what Rene Russo's for.
That's true. Or I also kind of thought, and maybe this is what happened in the alternate cut, like maybe the Frankie Faison character was like somehow like a genius, like businessman or something.
There had to be more to that character.
Yeah.
I mean, if they reshot that much, but there had to be stuff that...
He had to be in... Yeah, there had to be something else with him. Yeah.
But what kills me about that is, okay, if they cut out a bunch of what his character was, really... That one scene has no point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he could have just... Yeah. Emilio Estevez could have just crawled out of the river and gone on with things.
They could have done the shot, the hands coming up on the deck, or Doc, he pulls himself up, cut.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you needed. Yeah. Yeah.
There is no... Absolutely no point to that character, which is why I kept thinking he was going to come back, so that there was something to him. But there... You know, there's no point to the character in the current plot, but there seems to be so much more to it.
Yeah.
It had to be more.
And I would say Rene Russo's friend, too. Like, that.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. There is literally a line where Rene Russo's like, oh, that guy, he left. Yeah. You know, like, all right.
And for a movie that has, like, no plot or anything, this is a long, it's like an hour and 50 minutes long.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel it. I mean, you feel
for a movie where they cut that much out and there's still no plot or anything,
it's there's like, probably. There's probably 75 minutes of Emilio Estevez staring blankly at things in this hour
waiting
50
for the
movie.
Scene to start.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... So, Jack, what's your...
I don't think it's so bad. It's good. It's got some charm, but not much. It's just a dumb 90s action movie.
I'm ultimately going to agree. It's too long. It's just too long to be... Because it is crazy. Like, and there's all this, like, crazy villain motivation stuff, and, like, what is that? But it's... You just are sitting through so much, like, filler. Mm-hmm. And it's not... Yeah.
Well, Chris and I were talking before, too, how you were saying that, because I said it was a bad movie. It's like, it's bad now, but if you had seen it in, like, 1992, like, in the theater, would it be bad as bad then, too? Because it's, you know,
well, like when
nice thing,
like, the but... net was popular when it was new, but then it didn't
but I think,
age well
right.
at all.
Yeah. I think
like,
even
2 years after it was made, it was garbage.
But I think even this movie in 1992 was, like...
I think
trash.
I do remember yeah, this not... I think it was a bomb, too. Like, oh, I think it... I don't think it made
I never
money.
Heard of it. I saw it once when I was, like, 15, like, flipping through the channels, and I said, Mick Jagger's... What? Well, and I just watched it. I didn't even remember much about it.
You know what
else
is funny? Is this is sort of like... You can look at so much of the cast in this movie, because David Johansson's in it. Anthony Hopkins was... Probably the. I mean, he was.
Well, this
was
right after Silence of the Lambs.
Right after Silence of the Lambs, and they didn't need him for very long. So maybe they like just were like, oh, okay. They, who knows? They could have been in shooting.
I think it was probably shot in 91. Yeah.
In 91.
Silence of the Lambs was probably big when they're like, oh, we don't have enough.
Let's get him. And Mick Jagger was big because the Stones had that weird revival. You guys are all a little younger, so you don't remember this, but it was the Stones had a weird revival around Steel Wheels, and the Steel Wheels tour was, I didn't go see it, but tons of my friends did at the time, especially my friends who were a little older. And I remember thinking, like, these guys are old. Like, why are kids into the Stones, like, at this point in the early 90s? But for, like, a minute...
It was, like, new material they were singing, too, right?
Yeah.
Well, also, Mick Jagger has aged the same way Rene Russo has aged.
That's true, too. That's true, yeah. He looked... But, yeah. But he was, like, weirdly current for a moment. Like, everybody in this... Emilio Estevez...
I remember them being big when I was younger, yeah.
Yeah,
and
he was...
Obviously a big band all the time, but...
And Emilio Estevez coming off of Mighty Ducks and Young Guns.
And Maximum Overdrive.
And Maximum Overdrive.
Overdrive.
Yeah. And Young Guns was
and being
kind
in
of...
Estevez.
This is totally off topic. Have any of you seen either of the Young Guns movies?
I have. When I was younger, they were my...
They,
I liked them.
You talk about movies that have not aged well.
They have not aged well, no. When I was like 13, those movies were like boss.
They're troubling, like, and that's...
They've kind of aged poorly, yes, they have.
So everything from this is just very of that moment, and that... Yeah, except for Rene Russo, who went on to actually become a good, like, be in a lot of good
like
stuff.
Solid, solid.
And Jonathan Banks, who went on to be, like, an actual...
Which I was saying earlier, I'm rewatching Breaking Bad right now, so it's weird. Like, I'm in the Jonathan Banks stuff now in Breaking Bad, so it's weird to see him in this, which is terrible.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you know, job's a job.
Well.
Yeah. And maybe the original movie was better. Maybe Studio Medellin killed it. I can't imagine it ever being good, but maybe it was better.
I would be curious. I also don't blame Jonathan Banks. I think that was script and director choice. He's
Well, he's playing menacing, greedy villain. Yeah, he plays it well.
It's just a one-note character, and he, and I think
basically
he was just
every
like,
character right. except Mick Jagger is a one-note character.
Yeah, that's true. Even Renee Russo, like I'm not even really sure like her character is different. Like at the end,
Really, the only emotion was the crying in the blow-up video, the Nissan explosion.
Yeah, yeah.
The car was pretty. That was a magnificent explosion. It sold it.
That's it. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, I think this one brings this one to a close. So we do have our standing policy of never teasing movies that we're going to be coming up. But when it hits home video, Transformers 5, we will be doing Transformers 5.
I still haven't recovered from 4. Seen that in the theater.
I saw Transformers 5 in the theater.
Nice.
And fell asleep in the middle.
Oh my god. Was it like obnoxiously long, like the fourth one?
Were there like random blobs of metal that you can't tell what they are punching each other whilst Linkin Park music plays and there's some half naked girl running in slow motion?
When I read a review that said the Knights of the Round Table were involved, I was like, and book it.
Yep.
Like we
yep.
will
I'm
be.
Just that fourth one. I sat in the theater and watched that fourth one. I saw it alone. And it was like it was torture. Bad.
Well, we're gonna have to wait for home.
You wanna know something really scary? 4 is better than 2 or 3.
I've seen the first one, but not I didn't
2
see
and
the other
3
ones
are worse before, than 4, and 4 is not good.
Yeah, we're gonna have None to wait for this good. One to hit home video, because I'm also gonna need to be like checking email or something, I'm sure, while I'm watching it, but So I guess we can tease that one, and we have a couple other ones in the works. I don't want to promise any other ones, but Transformers 5, that one I feel like we can say will be coming up. Perfect. All right, we'll be back again soon, and we will see everyone back here next time. All right, bye.